Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 219 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today is a man you've heard before on this podcast. It is Michael, Mr. Punch Viers. How are you doing?
It's Mr. Punch.
I'm doing good, buddy.
I'm feeling good. I'm actually not feeling good. I'm tired as fuck.
we like to think we're feeling fine, but we're on the inside. We're slowly dying of tiredness.
Yeah, I'm just, as I was telling you off mic, just, I didn't get home until like 2 a.m. and had a busy day. So I'll just talk about it a little bit. My new film, No Soliciting, premiered in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I live, last night. And that was great. It was crazy seeing it on the big screen. Really nice projection. I can honestly say I think I had some of the best audio out of the group. But it's just draining because like I felt like Cinderella.
Oh,
in that everyone just wanted to keep talking to me. I just felt like the most important person at the ball, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But, oh, it was tiring.
Yeah. Socializing drains you, man. It can drain mm-hmm. you, especially when everyone wants to, you know, get in line and talk. And yeah, that can get exhausting. And you were even up early today, too, because you answered me almost right away once I was like, oh, shit. And what'd you get, like 5 hours last night?
Probably something like that, because yeah, I was trying to get breakfast with some people before I before they left, because we had some friends come from out of state to see my movie. Nice. They stayed with us. We decided to go get some brekkie, which is the reason I couldn't record this morning.
Yeah, that is totally fine. We made it happen. It's late, not late. It's evening time on Sunday afternoon here. Yeah.
We're going to have some fun here, and then probably going to go watch The Blackening later on. Thank you, by the way.
Oh, very nice, very nice. I'm going to continue on with my Stuart Gordon marathon and do Reanimator and From Beyond while I edit the podcast, because I'm just in a Stuart... Yeah. And I have to check out the new 4K from Vinegar Syndrome of From Beyond anyway, so it was an excuse to watch that.
Never seen From Beyond.
Oh, my God. Stuart Gordon, I feel, is... By the way, we're talking about dolls, if you hadn't seen the title of the episode.
Oh, yeah. I derail Austin all the time. He has a format, and I'm like, fuck your format. I'm just going to talk about whatever I want to.
Talking about dolls today. Stuart Gordon. And, yeah, he is just... I feel like he's criminally underappreciated because...
Oh, 100%.
Dolls, From Beyond, Reanimator. Those are three killer movies that he did in the 80s, and even beyond that, he's still done so much other work. But
and he made also Castle Freak, which is a fucking underrated movie.
That's a great one. That's a great one.
He did some good stuff for Masters of Horror. He did Dreams in the Witch House and The Black Cat. The man and he was an executive producer on Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, and he wrote Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, how fucking weird is that?
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, I saw that when I was looking up information. I'm like, that is so weird, but I mean,
it's weird to see Brian Usna and Stuart Gordon on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but if you think about it, if you just add some gore to that movie, that could have been a Charlie Band horror film.
It could have been. It really could have been. Yeah, between Charlie Band, Brian Usna, and Stuart Gordon, I mean, they're just like a fucking trio powerhouse. So good, and we will talk about many things. I think Charlie Band was on our Tourist Trap episode, I'm pretty sure.
That was one of his Empire films.
Yeah, and just like, this is another one of his Empire films. Man works so fucking much. But yes, Dolls from 1987, we will get there momentarily. I've got like a whole bunch of shit today. The horror news was just abundant, starting with, also welcome back to Scream Factory September. That's the theme for this month, where we are doing Scream Factory releases. Dolls is actually an out-of-print Blu-ray as well, so it can be hard to track that down.
And, I still got my copy.
Oh, you got, okay, good, yeah, because that is, people want a lot of money for that, but, and even the other release that Arrow did with the Empire of Screams, that's already out of print too, so it's really hard to find Dolls, but... If you got it back in the day or paid you a stupid amount like I did, then good for you. Because it is definitely worth owning the collection.
I got it for $15 used.
Oh, okay. Yeah?
At a local store.
Oh, they didn't know what they had then. Okay.
it might have been when it was still in print.
Okay.
That was years ago.
I was going to say, yeah, they might not have known what they had. That's the best place to find good scores, though, is places that don't know they have out-of-print things and price them ridiculously cheap. So... So first up here, I mentioned this before, I'm mentioning it again, it finally has a release date. Strangers Reboot Trilogy is coming next year, 2024, from Lionsgate. I don't know why we need an entire new fucking trilogy. I mean, they obviously have enough story to make three movies, or at least I hope they do.
Wait, we're talking about the home invasion movie, The Strangers,
correct,
right?
Yes. It's going to be
that
based on
three movies.
It doesn't. I mean, it already has two, and the second one is okay. So I don't know why everything has to be a trilogy nowadays. But I mean, it is Lionsgate. So I do like Lionsgate. They've announced it for the first movie to release next year. Probably have some information maybe during, you know, next month at New York Comic Con. There is a tiny first glimpse on Fangoria.com. It's not a lot there. It just really looks like it's one of the killers in the... It's the sackhead guy. He's peeking through a window and it says, you know, it's like more information will be coming soon, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I don't think we necessarily need an entire trilogy of Strangers movies. But I mean, if they have enough material, I guess go for it. I don't know. I just don't know if it's going to be like remaking or if they're going to be doing an entirely new story. But it's happening next year. I would be fine with one, but no, we're getting three. Actually, I just answered my own question. The remake centers around a couple played by Madeline Petch and Froy Gutierrez, who drive cross-country to begin a new life in the Pacific Northwest. When their car breaks down in Venus, Oregon, they are forced to spend the night in a secluded Airbnb where they are terrorized from dusk till dawn by three masked strangers. I'm so sick of these Airbnb movies because it makes me never fucking want to stay at an Airbnb, ever.
Well, you shouldn't want to say it one anyway.
Oh, I don't.
That is a fucked up business model.
I never really did to begin with, but with all these horror movies coming out, like Barbarian and now this and The Rental, I'm like, you know, this makes me not want to stay at one even more. I'm good. Plus, I've seen the horror stories with the people and cameras and being filmed, and it's very weird. I'm just going to stick to my hotels. Much more comfortable in a hotel than someone's random guest house.
Yeah.
Pass on that. So, look forward to that next year. And I guess every year after that for 3 years because they're making a fucking trilogy. Oh, my God.
Or don't. We can't control you.
Yeah, or don't. I mean, you know, if that's not your jam,
whatever.
Fuck it. I'm not going to tell you what to do. This is something I'm going to absolutely buy. Universal Monsters are getting a brand new 4K box set for Halloween. Universal Pictures has announced the 4K Universal Classic Monsters Limited Edition, which, as the name implies, will collect some of the classic Universal Monster films from the 30s and 40s. But the whole limited edition part is the rather important thing here. So it's going to be exclusive to Amazon, limited to 5,500 copies. And the movies that are going to be involved are Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Invisible Man, Bride of Frankenstein, The Wolfman, Phantom of the Opera, and Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I want to be more excited for this. But I own so many of those movies already. It's not 4K, but I own them on Blu-ray. And how old some of those movies are, like, you can only squeeze so much quality out of them.
That's true.
And I really miss when they were doing the Legacy Collection ones. The Legacy Collection Blu-rays. So, like, you'd have a Creature from the Black Lagoon Legacy Collection that had all the Creature movies just on there.
Ooh.
Or, like, I have, like, the Frankenstein Legacy Collection. It's got all the Frankenstein movies. And so it's like, I try not to it's not so much double dipping. I try not to buy collections that have too many movies I already have in various formats.
That's true.
Like, it's appealing. Like, a couple years ago, Best Buy did a series of, like, really beautiful, like, Universal Monster Steelbooks, and I wanted to buy all those. And I was like, no, I
don't
own these movies. Like, they're exactly the same as what I have. They just have nicer packaging. I'm fine.
Well, and they even have some already that are already out. Like, there's a classic Universal Monsters 4K that has Mummy, Bride of Frankenstein, Phantom of the Opera, and Creature from the Black Lagoon. So it seems like, I don't know if they're, I doubt they're new scans. I assume that they're already the 4Ks that they already have. They're just putting it in a bigger bundle. But see, for me, I think I only own Dracula. I don't have a lot So
in that case, then it's perfect for you.
Yeah, this is great for me because I don't own a lot of those classic ones, and I've always wanted to. So, Universal says that each of the films has been digitally restored from high-resolution film elements to make up these new 4K releases.
So there might be new scans, then.
I guess so.
Potentially,
yeah. The collection features over 12 hours of bonus features, including behind-the-scenes featurettes, production photographs, and feature commentaries. The collection is currently available to pre-order and retails for $129 due to release on October 3rd, which would get to your point just in time for spooky season. And that's not bad for 8K.
No, it's 4Ks. Not bad.
Yeah,
but
that's not terrible.
I get what you want to hear. Terrible. Small little tangent. So for Disney's 100th anniversary, remember we've talked before about like Disney. Disney can't fucking decide if they like physical media or not.
They can't.
In a weird move, they for their 100th anniversary, they're putting out this animation collection of 100 animated films for
$1,500. $1,500. What the fuck? I like movies, like, but man.
Who's going to buy this?
And did you see the packaging? How all the discs are like in cardboard on like this big...
Yeah.
Fuck that. No. I don't like cardboard inserts. I always feel like they're going to get scratched or something. I've never been a fan of the cardboard inserts, but yeah, that is
and then the glue can sometimes come off and get on the disc. And
I guarantee they're not putting in as much heart and like soul into that packaging. I guarantee they're not. That's going to be flimsy as shit. $1,500. I saw that and my mouth dropped to the floor. I was like, who the fuck is buying that? That is too much money. I mean, it's like $15 a movie, which is, that's great, but like, holy shit.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we don't know how, we care so little about physical media to the point that we're not even going to sell them anymore in Australia. But we're going to give you this weird box set for $1,500.
Enjoy it!
And all I want from them is give me the old legacy tins back when they used to give like collection of like Mickey Mouse shorts and, you know, give me that shit.
Give me that shit.
Whatever. That's not horror related. Yeah,
I don't want, I don't want 100 movies. Could you imagine searching for those movies when you had to open that shit up? I don't even understand.
It reminds me of like, I feel like every horror fan has a version of this, like the Mill Creek, like 50 horror movie, like there were none of them look good. And there's usually like two or three movies and they're all in like these weird, like sleeves and just searching through them all. No,
I'm good. I'll, you know, I don't even understand. I mean, that's crazy. I don't think I've ever seen a hundred count movie collector's item. That's fucking bananas. But even you can have that for yourself for a whopping, actually no, for a very small $1,500. It's not that much.
And I think it counts as horror news because that's horrifying how much.
Yeah, exactly. For. It is horrifying. Plus tax on that. No, I'm good. I'm going to see. I saw someone post that in one of the Facebook groups, and I'm going to see if anyone actually buys it and posts a picture of it so I can call them a fucking loser. Oh, my God.
That's my boy.
Next up here, if you can believe it, because I could not believe it, we're getting Thanksgiving from Eli Roth. It's only been 15 years, but we are
getting...
And he's
been talking about this for a while. I didn't think...
I didn't think it was going to happen.
It's fallen apart a couple times.
So yeah, 15 years after its fake Grindhouse trailer, Thanksgiving finally hits theaters on November 17th. Today I saw the trailer actually in theaters today when I went to see The Nun 2, and I was like, fuck yeah, I'm so excited. This holiday horror stars Patrick Dempsey, Nell Verlake, Addison Rae, Jalen Thomas Brooks, Milo Mannheim, Gina Gershon, Tim Dillon, and Rick Hoffman. Yes, that Patrick Dempsey and that TikTok star Addison Rae, who I guess I'm old man Proctor. I have no fucking clue who Addison Rae is, but good for you breaking into the movie place. The plot synopsis is pretty, you know, it's a mystery at this point, but I mean, like, it's Thanksgiving. I mean, really don't need much else. It's a guy going around killing people in crazy ways. And if you see the trailer, it looks like it's going to be bloody. And it's so different than the grimy, you know, grindhouse aesthetic that we got. This is going to be so much more polished and like clean around the edges, which I'm kind of excited for. I did like the aesthetic for Grindhouse because it was supposed to be like that, but I'm very excited to get a very clean, nice looking new Eli Roth movie that is gonna probably have some wacky wild kills. We all know Eli Roth. He likes his gore and his practical effects. So I can't even remember the last fucking thing he did. Was it like Knock Knock or something? Is that the last
one? I think the last thing he did was The House of a Clock and Its Walls.
Oh, that's right.
Which
that's
I
right.
think is a very underrated, delightful film. And it's usually one of my early, when I'm trying to get into spooky season, one of the movies I watch. Okay. And then he's doing the Borderlands movie, if you can fucking believe
that. Oh, that's right. That's right.
And
okay.
He got fucking Jamie Lee Curtis in that movie to be in a Borderlands movie. Like, I've got questions.
Because I think she's playing Moxie, I think.
I never played Borderlands, but.
Oh, that's great.
I will say, I'm a bit of an Eli Roth apologist. I think some people are way too fucking hard on him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean,
well, I'm also a Rob Zombie apologist. So what do you expect?
So, I have no taste. The last thing he did, yes, was actually he did something called Finn, which I...
Oh, that was a documentary that he did for Discovery Channel about the illegal about illegal shark fin hunting.
Oh, okay.
It's on... He's kind of an animal activist.
Okay, it's on Max. That's cool. Yes, then House of the Clock and Clock in Its Walls, Death Wish, and then Knock Knock.
Oh, fuck, he did do Death Wish. Yeah, I never saw that.
I still have to see that one. I forgot that he did that one. Until right now. But yeah, I mean, it's, so it's been, you know, House of the Clock and Its Walls was 5 years ago. So it's been 5 years since we've had an Eli Roth movie. And that wasn't even really, I know there's a lot of horror homages and he did like a great job with it, but there, you know, wasn't really a horror movie. So we haven't gotten like a good bloody horror movie from him in a while. So this is exciting.
Yeah, House of the Clock and Its Walls is very like R.L. Stein.
Yeah, like Goosebumpsy. I still need to see that one. And
oh, it's delightful.
Okay. It's on,
fucking delightful.
It's on FX now. Okay. I'll just rent it or buy it. But
I bought the 4K. It's nice.
Looking. Oh, there's a 4K out there? Oh, hell yeah. I'll just buy that. Yeah. Jack Black, Cate Blanchett. Oh,
I will tell you this right now.
Okay.
If you buy House of Clock and Its Walls and you don't like it, I will reimburse you for your purchase. Oh, shit.
These are some high stakes here.
Unless it's like an out-of-print crazy price, then fuck that.
This was
like,
$75, Michael. You give me my money.
Show me an itemized receipt.
Let's see. Yeah, I definitely need to watch that one. I still need to watch like the Goosebumps.
Here's how much
stuff
I like
too.
That movie.
Okay.
My 2020, during the height of the pandemic.
Yeah.
I had just been missing the movie theaters. My wife rented out a private theater.
Oh shit!
For me and some of my friends, and I was going to show a horror movie, but I had a couple people who are bringing like girlfriends or whatnot who don't like horror, so I was trying to respect that.
Okay.
But my birthday is like September 20th, so it's like right in the beginning of like when people are starting to get in spooky mode. So fuck, I want to show something, and I thought. I loved The House of the Clock and Its Walls. So many people didn't give it the time of day because, you know, it came so closely after Goosebumps, so people thought it's just kind of a Goosebumps knockoff.
Okay.
Other people thought, Eli Roth did a kids movie. Fuck this shit. So like, I made an audience of people watch it.
Nice.
And they loved it.
All right. I'm in. It's been on my list for a while, so it's just time to do it. Time for spooky season. It is upon us. I'm down. I'm down with it. So yeah, Thanksgiving coming out November 17th. Don't miss that. I'm going to be seeing that in theaters. If time allows, I will definitely be going to see that. Couple more things here real quick. Lionsgate is crushing it apparently lately. Sets the Crow reboot for 2024 starring Bill Skarsgård. I had heard about this and I'd seen like posters and shit, but you know how the internet is. I don't trust anything until it's announced. So this actually is happening. It's been a while since we've heard anything about it, but the upcoming reboot of The Crow starring Bill Skarsgård and FKA Twigs is happening. It says Deadline that Lionsgate has secured an 8-figure deal for domestic rights to the action horror movie, famous for being the last on-screen appearance of the late Brandon Lee, who was tragically killed during production. The Crow is based on the comic by James O'Barr and follows Eric Draven, a musician resurrected from death to take revenge on the gang that murdered him and his fiancée. Whether the reboot will differ from the source material is still unknown, but we do know the script was written by Oscar nominee Zach Baylin and Will Schneider. So they are on location shooting in Prague and Munich, which gives us hope that it will be gorgeous because it's a great area to shoot in. But yeah, anything else? I know Skarsgård's also doing Robert Eggers' Nosferatu. And hopefully he comes back for Welcome to Derry, but none of that has been, you know, that's not have been confirmed yet. Still praying and
just
hoping.
Just be hopeful.
Yeah, still praying and hoping. So that's something fun to look forward to. I think Skarsgård has the look for it, and I think he's a strong enough actor to pull it off. I know some people can be hard on him sometimes, but I mean, the man has fucking range. And I believe in Skarsgård. I mean, he's a Skarsgård after all. I mean, come on. Last but not least here, Universal is crushing it. With their streaming on Peacock this month, they are going hard in the paint with their September streaming lineup, as they should. It's only owned by NBC Universal, who has the richest horror catalogs in existence. I mean, they built an entire haunt around it, not to mention Universal is home to the Universal Monsters. But the classic monsters have been missing from the platform for some time. Now they will be back, and they're bringing some friends along. There are tons of options to marathon. You've got, I mean, I'm not going to read all of these, but there's about 98 movies. You've got 6 Amityville movies. You've got 6 Chucky movies and season 2 of the show. Some Frankenstein movies, a whole bunch of Mummy movies, Psycho 1 through 3 in the remake, 7 Saw movies, the 2 Tales from the Crypt movies, Bordello of Blood and Demon Knight, and so, so much more. Like I said, about 98 movies, and that will be coming this month at some point. So if you are a spooky fan, be prepared, because they're going to be dumping a lot of movies.
Which, you know how weird it would be if you had someone listening to this podcast who doesn't like spooky shit? They just like...
I don't like horror movies.
That'd be the funniest thing ever.
I don't like horror movies. I just like listening to podcasts about stuff.
I like listening to people talk about horror movies because I don't want to watch them.
It's funny, though, because I actually do have a friend, shout out to Kat, who does listen to the podcast, and if I talk about how, like, you know, a little bit too gory or something, like, she'll kind of judge based on what she knows she's comfortable with. So there's definitely podcasts she's listened to that she has not watched the movie on, which I find that's fucking fascinating to me. Like, I don't think she watched Midsommar because of my review, because it's, you know, that one's pretty tough, that one's pretty intense. So I find that to be funny. I know there's one person out there that is on the cusp of being like the big spooky fan, but they have limits, and that's fine. I understand. I'm not going to make you watch something that's super crazy. So let's get on to the IMDb. Unless you have anything else horror-wise or anything news-wise that you've seen. Maybe on Facebook, honestly, or something.
Honestly, not really. This has been a... Like I said, I'm just kind of starting to kick off spooky season. And
very nice.
Which is, you know, could be a topic in itself.
Yeah, we've got the fall-scented candles going, or the fall-scented wallflowers from Bath and Body Works, and we've got the spooky candles, and we are definitely vibing up for spooky season. We're starting to bring down all the decorations for the yard and shit. So I still got to buy my costume. It's gonna be a whole fight. We're doing trick or treat theme this year for the outside decorations. It's
very cool.
Be excellent. We always go all above and beyond in the neighborhood, and really have started some competitions with people because you know, we're on the corner lot, so everyone sees our house, so we just go all out.
It's gonna be like that scene in Tales from Halloween where you're gonna be just competing with one of the other neighbors.
And we keep getting more neighbors because they keep adding more houses in the next phase, and I'm like, god damn it, I'm gonna have to step up my game every year. It's gonna get exhausting, but
I'm excited for, there's a guy in our neighborhood, bordering neighborhood. He does a home haunt every year called Novak Manor.
Yes.
And it is the best home haunt I've ever been to.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love home haunts. There used to be one down in Fort Myers, but they stopped doing it. And I was like, it was a really good one too. But yeah, one of these years I'm going to convince Gabby to let me borrow the garage for a home haunt. Every year I get a little bit closer to let it. She's always like, I don't want to park outside. I'm like, I don't want to park outside either, but I want to fucking have a little spooky haunted house, man. It'd be so cool. one of these years, I'm sure I can bribe my child to make pouty face at her when she's old enough. I'm like, I want to go through a haunted house one day. Let's do this. IMDb roundup. Here we go. Whipcrack. Dolls from 1987. Released on May 29th of that year in the US of A, rated R for mild sex and nudity, moderate violence and gore, moderate profanity, mild alcohol, drugs and smoking, and moderate frightening and intense scenes. Coming in at a very, very brisk hour and 17 minutes. This is like my favorite part about this movie. It is, you are in and you are out. No time is wasted. I'm a sucker for short movies. Like Chopping Mall is another one that's like 78 minutes or something like that.
Love it.
I love short, quick horror movies. This is listed straight up as a horror, nothing else. Directed by the man himself, Stuart Gordon, also did things like Reanimator, From Beyond, Robot Jocks, Castle Freak, Space Truckers, and Dagon, which we've done on this show before. Written by a man named Ed Naha, who he did some stuff. He did things like Troll, Chud 2, Bud the Chud, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, and Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. I love Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. I feel like that one's vastly underrated. That's the one I grew up watching as a kid. I fucking love that movie. Produced by 5 people, Brian Usna and Charles Band being 2 of the names that I immediately recognize. I mean, Brian Usna has produced many things, and I'm not even going to start listing all the stuff that Charles Band has produced. We would be here day.
He is, love him or hate him, the man is goddamn prolific.
The man works. The man works so much. I believe he has, let's just double check real quick. I think he has about 500 producer credits, if I'm not mistaken, between all his time and Empire. Okay, producer, he had 412 credits. I mean, shit. It is crazy. He's directed some things as well. 85 director credits. The man works. composed by someone named Fuzzy Morse. I saw that.
That is a great name. It's
the greatest name. They also did Ghoulies 2, or he or she, I'm not sure who or what. Cinematography by Mac Alberg, who also did things like Hell Knight, The Dungeon Master, Ghoulies, Trancers, Reanimator, House, From Beyond, House 2, The Second Story, Prison, Ghost Town, Robot Jocks, Beverly Hills Cop 3, Space Truckers, Good Burger, and Evil Bong. So
it's a weird collection of stuff.
It is a very odd collection of movies there, especially when you get down to Good Burger.
Yeah, I love Good Burger, though.
That's a great one. Aren't they supposed to be doing a sequel to that one at some point? I swear they were in production.
I think they're working on it currently.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great movie. That's such a classic Disney film. Or no, that's Nickelodeon.
Yeah,
that's Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon.
Edited by Lee Percy, who also edited Reanimator, Troll, From Beyond, Blue Steel, Single White Female, and Carrie from 2013. So it's no wonder this movie's so fucking good. Everyone that's been involved in this has been on Reanimator and From Beyond. Like, those are all fucking amazing movies if you've never seen them. Starring a man named Ian Patrick Williams as David Bauer, who was also in Reanimator as the Swiss professor. Then we've got Carol Purdy Gordon as Rosemary Bauer.
Stuart Gordon's wife.
Oh, it is. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. She's also in many of his movies, but she's also in Reanimator as Dr. Herod. We've got Carrie Lorraine as Judy Bauer, who only did four things. This was her last credit, but she was also in Poltergeist 2 as Kane's people. So don't know what that is. I know he had people. I guess she was one of the people that he had. We've got Guy Rolfe as Gabriel Hartwick, who also was in Puppet Master 3-5 as Tuyan. And last but not least, we've got Hillary Mason as Hillary Hartwick, who was also in Robot Jocks as Professor Laplace.
And can I point out another name that is worth mentioning?
You always name people that I always forget, so please do.
We for in credited under special makeup effects.
Oh,
John Carl Beekler.
And what has this man done?
Well, first of all, the man directed Friday the 13th Part 7.
Okay, the New Blood. All right.
Yep. Yeah. On top of that, he did special effects on Hatchet. He did like Mortuary, Evil Dead. Ginger Dead Man. yes. He did. The Ghoulies movies. He did. He did makeup on Halloween 4. He did Nightmare on Elm Street 4. He even did makeup on Friday the 13th Part 7.
Oh, nice.
He did Cellar Dweller. He did From Beyond. He did Crawl Space, Terror Vision, Troll, Trancers, Hard Rock Zombies. The man has done a fuck ton.
Yeah, all these, everyone behind the scenes has just been a part of Reanimator or something together at some point. And I think that's why this movie works so well, because Reanimator was obviously previous to this movie. Reanimator was 85 and From Beyond was 86. But weirdly enough, this movie was like in production before From Beyond, but it took so long in post that they had to delay it for almost an entire year.
All that stop motion, this probably slowed them down.
Oh, yeah. And it still looks killer, even today.
Yeah.
Even, 35 years later, it still looks fucking killer. So, let's see here. Estimated budget of $2 million worldwide box office gross, could not find. Filmed in Rome, Italy. You can watch this on Prime, Tubi, or buy the Shout Factory Blu-ray if you can find it. Yeah. Movies that came out around the same time, we've got My Demon Lover, Creepshow 2, The Gate, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Ernest Goes to Camp, The Untouchables, Predator, The Witches of Eastwick, The Brave Little Toaster, Spaceballs, and Full Metal Jacket. Bunch of good stuff coming out around that time. ooh. Specific horror moments, sir. Do you have one or two?
Yes. My favorite horror moments, because I watched this like a week ago, so bear with me a little bit.
You're fine.
Was when Ralph and what was the girl's name?
The little girl?
Mm-hmm.
Judy.
When Ralph and Judy were looking through the attic the first time when they're trying to find that punk girl, and like you just she like kind of just came out of the shadow, and you got the first glimpse of her doll face.
That is mine too. That is no it's shit.
Fucking killer.
That is mine fucking too. Killer. It was the first doll that made a face, but then when that scene happened, yeah, when she's like in the rocking chair with the like doll
fucking
face.
Fucking killer.
I was like, and she didn't make a noise. They didn't see him. That's something only the audience sees. I'm just like, ah, no. Too creepy.
Yeah, no musical stinger, nothing.
nothing. It was complete silence while they were looking for her. Oh, that was such a great scene.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite kill. There weren't many kills,
no.
But there were some good ones. Did you have one?
I guess if I had to pick one, just for the ridiculousness of it, was probably the firing squad.
Yes, that's mine too. It was so ridiculous.
Yes.
Oh, because she's actually, it's her name's Enid, and she actually was beating the shit out of some dolls previous to this, and then she comes in contact with a little firing squad, and she's just standing there, and they're just like, boop, boop, and then they're playing the drums, and the guy has his sword, and he throws it down, and she gets shot four more times. That was a good
fucking
one.
Great.
That was a good
fucking
one.
Great.
Did you have a favorite character? There was a lot of fucking hateable characters in this movie.
My favorite character is Ralph.
Okay, same. All right, so we're just going on. We're batting 1,000 right now. Okay.
And you know my dog Ralphie.
Yeah.
The one who's missing a leg. The character of Ralph in this, like, we didn't name Ralphie after anyone. He came with that name. But seriously, Ralph in this movie is the human equivalent of our dog.
Oh.
Like that was what he would be like if he was a human.
That's so great. Yeah, he was pretty much the only likable person. Maybe the kid, because she got treated very poorly by her parents. Oh my god.
Yeah, they suck.
They really sucked. Least favorite character.
Oh my god. How do you pick?
I know, mine was a tie between two people.
Let's see. Mine was probably her dad, David.
Okay, yeah, all right. So this is the only spot where we're going to differ, because mine was a tie between Rosemary and Isabel, because Isabel was, you know, she got picked up, her and Enid got picked up by Ralph, and they just barge into their house. They start eating the soup without, you know, asking for anything. And then she's like, I'm going to ransack the place and steal all their shit. Like, wow, you're a really shit human being. And Rosemary was just a fucking ray of sunshine. Oh, my God. David progressively got worse though as the film went on, because at first you're like, okay, maybe he likes her, you know, Judy, but towards the end of the movie when he's just like, we'll just get rid of the little twerp and send her back to Boston, I'm like, all right, you're a piece of shit too.
Yeah, pretty much.
And even Gabriel and Hillary, kind of weirdo fucking creeps, not really like hateable, but weird fucking people. I had one favorite line. It was like in the very beginning of the movie. I don't know if you had one. There wasn't really many like funny lines. There was a few funny moments, but I don't know if you had a line or not.
Yeah, I did. It was okay. Fuck you, clowny.
That was David, right?
Yeah. I think
that was David.
Yeah, when he was fighting with Mr. Punch.
Mr. Punch. Mine
fuck you, clowny.
Mine was right at the beginning of the movie, and it's when Rosemary's driving and she almost hits the two hitchhikers, and David's like, whoa, like you almost hit them. She's like, should I turn back around and try again? I was like, Jesus Christ.
Like, holy, I forgot about that one.
Holy shit. Crazy. IMDb summary here. A dysfunctional family of three stopped by a mansion during a storm. Father, stepmother, and child. The child discovers that the elderly owners are magical toy makers and have a haunted collection of dolls. And I love the opening to this movie, just mainly because it's very simple. It's credits with names and then creepy fucking doll faces.
That's all you need.
Some of them staring into your soul, other ones looking completely like they have no life in them at all. And it's like a little jaunty tunes going on in the background, too. It's very playful and light. I find this movie to be almost charming. It's very bizarre because it's about killer dolls, but somehow there's this charm to it, probably because it's, you know, in the 80s. We cut to the family. That's the first people we see, the hitchhikers trying to get a ride. Car blows past them, and we focus on the family, who have a very fucking weird dynamic, because it's not Judy's mom, it's her stepmother, and it shows. She is openly hated from her stepmother. And even David, kind of, like I said, in the beginning, he doesn't really show it too much, but he really unravels as the movie goes on, and it shows that he does not like her. They end up getting stuck in a rainstorm that comes out of nowhere. It was like a perfectly sunny day. Did you notice that? It was like a fine sunny day, and all of a sudden it's just like...
I have had days that that's happened. So
true, yeah.
It's possible.
It was.
It's not impossible, obviously. It's improbable.
Yeah, it was.
But yes,
yeah,
I noticed.
It was nice and sunny, and then all of a sudden storm comes in. They get stuck in the mud, and they have to go to this house, which is the only house they can see in the distance. Great start to a movie. You know that, I mean, that's pretty much the entire setup, you know? I love that on the way there, Rosemary just chucks Judy's bear into the forest for no fucking reason at all.
Oh, and then you get that great, like, imagination scene.
Oh, yeah. This kid has a sick fucking imagination because she daydreams about a giant teddy bear coming out of the woods and mauling Rosemary and David to death. And she's like, oh, Teddy. Like, and then I was like, wait, did that happen? I can't remember. And then, no, it's an imagination. I'm like, you need to be medicated, child. If that's what you're daydreaming of, I mean, I guess it makes sense because her parents are just raging assholes, but you shouldn't be having that dark of thoughts at that young of an age.
She's seen some shit.
She's definitely seen some shit, and it shows. But yeah, that's a great little imagination, and it does kind of set the tone with her because it's brought to our attention as the audience that this is a frequent thing with her. She daydreams a lot. She talked about, you know, trolls or fairies or whatever the shit. So it's something that she does all the time. So
like when she starts alerting the parents later on, they choose not to believe her, and it's also a really clever way for Stuart Gordon to, because it's kind of an extended period of time in this film before anything too sinister starts happening. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to kind of start off with a bang without having to show your hand too soon.
No,
it's a clever dynamic. It's a clever way to do it.
It was, yeah, because you obviously think that's real at first, and you're wondering how the fuck that's even possible until it's, you know, until it's revealed that it's a daydream. But yeah, then I'd say the first time the dolls actually make an appearance on screen, like moving in front of you, is almost like 47 minutes into this movie. And for a movie at an hour and 17 minutes, that leaves you with about, you know, 30 or so minutes of, I mean, full tilt bonkers for sure, which is great. They don't
leave. Yeah, there's like little things and like creepy moments and eyes moving, but yeah, it's like without that bear sequence, it would have been a very slow burn.
Yeah, and which for that short of a movie would have probably not worked as well. But I love that scene in the beginning because it does really set the tone. You're like, okay, this is what we're going to get when we get gore. That was pretty good. That bear was terrifying as shit. So yeah, I really love that scene in the beginning. And even when they get to the house, no one answers. So they just find their way in as you typically would, a old country home in the middle of nowhere, and they're eventually approached by Gabriel and Hillary with a gun, like, hey, we don't like people we like people coming in through the front door, maybe could you do that? But then they eventually just kind of get over that real quick because they invite them up for whatever the fuck was in that. Was that soup? What the hell was that?
I have no idea what that was.
It looked disgusting. It looked like spinach soup or something. It looked horrible. So they're like, come on upstairs, we'll warm you guys up. And on the way there, that Judy notices the room just chock full of dolls. I mean, every fucking room in this house has a copious amounts of dolls. Too many dolls.
Does your house not?
No, I have a bunch of standees like that, but no dolls. Okay, wait. I got one. I got a little leather face right here.
Oh, he's angry.
He's sad. Yeah, he's sad leather face. So yeah, it's, you know, when we find out that Gabriel is a doll maker, a toy maker, and that's why he has all these. And once you figure out where some of those dolls come from, that's like, it was like Tourist Trap. You know how we love that ending scene? This is another ending scene that I fucking love. We'll get there. So at this point too, I noticed that Gabriel and Hillary are, I use the word eccentric. Would that be a fitting word for them? They're a little weird.
They're a little. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the aunt from Sleepaway Camp, where they're just kind of like having asides to themselves, like, "Oh, I wonder if that's what we should do. What do you think?"
And yeah,
it's, yeah, they are eccentric.
Okay,
is definitely the best way to put it.
Yeah. So he eventually tells Judy, he's like, "Hey, you know, why don't you have a doll? A girl, a little girl that doesn't have a doll doesn't make sense. So he's, and we're introduced to Mr. Punch, and I would say he's like the
way to like just reinforce gender roles, man.
Right?
Character in your movie. Like, why can't she have a fucking G.I. Joe?
Yeah, what's the problem with that? She did have something until Rosemary chucked it into the fucking woods. But yeah. she gets Mr. Punch. He's like the main little guy that we deal with throughout most of the movie, and you don't even see him come to life until like the 20 minutes left in the movie. And but it's funny, I feel like in a weird sense it's like Mr. Punch was kind of watching over Judy this entire movie, since she was
like a little guardian angel. I feel like Mr. Punch is gonna make sure nothing happened to,
right,
to Judy,
right? And you know, all the other dolls at some point, you know, everyone gets attacked at one point. But and then here we get the sequence where the two girls and Ralph, I thought, because I hadn't seen this in a while, and I was like, okay, I can't remember. Like, do they live there? They don't live there. No, but we're introduced to Isabel, Enid, and Ralph, who picked up the hitchhikers, and now they're in the house, and they just storm into the house, and I'm like, do they not lock their fucking doors in this house? They just welcome intruders?
I just have to point out real quick. I loved Isabel and Enid. Like, they're terrible people.
Yeah.
But they were such fun. Like, especially Enid. She's just like, she didn't seem like a spiteful, like a mean person. She just seems like she's dumb and just follows what people do. Like,
yeah.
I absolutely love that line later on where they're like, and Isabel's like, oh, can we listen to music? And she's like, yeah, we're down on the other side of the house. And she's like, it goes to Enid's like, did you hear that? It's like, yeah, we can listen to music.
Yeah, because
you idiot.
Even at one point too, when she's trying to, when Isabel's trying to like say, I'm going to steal all the shit, Enid's like, no, I don't think we should do that. So it's like, you can definitely tell that she has some sort of guilty remorse and some sort of a heart. But yeah, I think she's just following Isabel around because she's a badass chick.
If anything, I wish they were in this movie just a little bit longer because they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they were a wild bunch, honestly. What accent did Isabel have, by the way? Like, I could not figure out what.
Like, well, I think it was supposed to be English.
Okay,
she is English. So I think it's just a really thick Cockney accent.
Okay, yeah.
However, because she was born in Cornwall. She used to date the singer in the band A-ha, which they're Swedish. So maybe some of that accent
kind of rubbed off,
blended through. Yeah, yeah. Actually, fun fact for anyone listening: if you guys go watch the A-ha music video for "Take on Me," the actress Bunty Bailey, who plays Isabel, is in that music video.
Oh, wow. What a name, too. I saw that. I was like,
Bunty Bailey?
The hell?
That's a great name. You should have named CJ Bunty.
Bunty?
Come here, Bunty.
Bunty June Proctor?
Sounds like a dog. Come here, Bunty.
Come here, Bunt. Get over here.
Bunty June. Oh, no, you don't want that.
Oh, it's BJ. BJ. Oh, God, no. Caroline, if you're listening to this in the future, I'm sorry. So let's see. But so the girls are very brash, I would say, and they want to steal things and take his car key or take Ralph's car keys and his wallet, and they want to swipe a whole bunch of stuff from the house. Well, Isabel does. Enid doesn't. Yeah.
Is it valuable? It's old, but would other people consider it to be valuable?
Would other people buy it from me for money? Just like, let me.
That entire bit was great.
That was so great. She's like, well, they're very old and they're antiques. I'm pretty sure Isabel at one point referenced them as antiques. And I was like,
antiques? No, antiques.
Antiques. There we go. Antiques. Motherfucker. Oh, my God.
Oh, antiques.
So she kind of gets what she has coming for when she starts to ransack the place, because this is a pretty cool moment as well when she gets attacked by the unseen forces that we assume are the dolls, because the name of the movie is Dolls. And she gets rammed into the baseboards a few times, and then gets dragged off into the night up to the attic, which we later see that scene where Ralph and Judy are looking around. And of course, you know, no one wants to believe Judy because they're maniacs. So she ends up going to Ralph, and his complete lack of care for the situation at first was great, because Judy's like, oh my God, you know, like someone dragged them away. They were trolls and there's a bunch of blood everywhere. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. We'll deal with it in the morning. I'm like, wow, she's mentioning blood and you're not even kind of curious. But then he sees the blood on her slippers and he's like, oh my God, we have to go look at this. And that's when we get the scene that we love so much, where they're in the attic and Isabel now has a doll face, which is super fucking creepy. And you can see it there in the pitch black for a second before she starts to move. That whole scene is very, very great. Very great.
And one thing we should mention a little bit too is just about Ralph. Like, he is he is pretty much throughout this movie the only person who believes the little girl at all, and he just seems like a straight up nice guy.
Yeah, he's the only one that takes her seriously, because even when he starts to take her seriously and he tries to tell the adult, because he's like, the adult, you know, they'll listen to me, I'm an adult. Nobody wants to listen to Ralph either. They're like, oh, you're just buying into her bullshit. And he's like, no, it's really happening. And then even he gets accused of it when Isabel goes missing, and he's like, no, it was, I didn't do this. What? So yeah, he's such a great guy that everyone wanted to fucking blame for all this stuff. And I was like, you've met Ralph, right? He's you can't tell he's a genuine guy. Like, come on.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Leave Ralph alone.
Leave Ralph alone. Rosemary eventually gets attacked too, and didn't really understand the choice of wanting to yeet herself out of a window, but she does after getting brutally mauled by all those dolls, which was a great scene. That's the first scene that you actually see the dolls moving, and they have all these knives, and they stab her, and they cut a chunk out of her arm, and they start sawing her leg off. And even later, when the dolls put her back into bed, it's such a great scene because David's there and she's got the sheets completely over her head and there's blood on the sheets. And he's like, I'm going to go shower. I'll be right back. And then comes back and doesn't realize that she's dead until he pulls the sheets down and her eyes like popped out and she's got like a gash in her chin.
It's pretty grody.
It is so grody. Oh, my God. Of course, Enid gets attacked, too, as we said, by the little firing squad. It was such a funny scene because the little drummer guy's drumming and the commander
it definitely like had a sense of humor to it.
Yeah, it was so
you
great.
Can't make a movie called Dolls and take it too fucking serious.
Yeah, they I feel like they take it just seriously enough but also have a lot of fun with it at the same time. I love when Ralph finally realizes that the dolls do come alive and they do attack people, and he thinks it's creepy as fuck, so he responds by attacking one of the dolls. And then they respond by coming back. I love the little when one of the dolls like curls her fists up like this after Ralphie.
Yeah,
I was like, oh shit, you better go, Ralphie.
You better run, buddy. They'll get you.
But luckily Judy's there and it's like, stop, like don't hurt Ralph.
Oh, and actually that was one of my other favorite lines when they're like, they're trying to figure out if you're really an adult or a kid disguised as an adult. And he goes, I've been trying to figure that out myself. And I was like, Ralph's going through some stuff, man.
He's going through some stuff. When David does find Enid's body, Rosemary's body, again, he blames it on Ralph. And he goes down to find Ralph to attack him and knocks him out and he's going to bash his fucking head in with something. But then we see Mr. Punch come alive. And he like shoots him with a little, what does he shoot him with? It's like a little knife or something like that. It gets him right in the back of the neck. And then
I'm not 100% sure.
It was like a little knife or a little dart. And then he and Mr. Punch and David have this fucking just epic battle going back and forth where eventually.
Fuck you, Clowny.
Yeah, fuck you, Clowny. Where unfortunately David does mash the ever loving fuck out of Mr. Punch and.
When we get the great reveal that it's like a shrunken person on the inside?
No, he was the only one that actually didn't have like a little shrunken. He's the only one because when Mr. Punch's face got busted open, there was no like skeleton there. But that's something that is revealed when Enid is fighting all of them and she starts smashing them. There's like, they have like there's like a corpse underneath the doll. And that was such a good
shrunken. Like,
yeah. That was a great choice. I have some trivia on that. I believe Stuart Gordon was behind that. The epic battle between Mr. Punch and David. And it's so funny. When I was sitting here, I'm like, okay, where the fuck are Gabriel and Hillary at this point? Because there has been mass commotion going on for...
Other side of the house.
By the way, how fucking big is this house? Because everyone has their own room. And they're like, what is this, like a nine-story farm, like a nine-bedroom farmhouse? Christ, it's huge. So
you don't have a nine-story farmhouse? What the fuck?
I know. I'm obviously slacking. I've only got four bedrooms. I'm slacking, man. I need to move to the country, apparently, and get a ginormous house because you can
eat a lot of peaches.
Right? You can have people apparently murdered in there and you wouldn't even know because they're on the other side of the house. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So Hillary and Gabriel finally... come down there, and I don't know what exactly happened to David, but I guess the thing that Mr. Punch hit him with, it made him turn into a Mr. Punch doll himself, and that was the coolest bit, because he starts to kind of puff up, like, what happened?
I don't think that was necessarily Mr. Punch.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. If it was just magic, I don't know.
Oh, yes, because there's that line where I think when the dolls are coming to like, and David says something like, it's witchcraft, and Hillary's like, oh, I'm glad you noticed. And then they reveal that she's actually like, they're like warlocks or magicians or something, and then essentially turns him into a doll, which kind of gives you the idea that all their dolls are
people, yeah.
People.
Which was great. So he killed Mr. Punch, so he gets turned into a Mr. Punch. And you kind of wonder, like, fuck, how many times has that happened at this establishment? Because I feel like it's not the first time. And I love the next day, too, when, because we're coming towards the end of the movie now, Judy and David wake up the next day and are pretty much gaslit by Hillary and Gabriel. Like, no.
They're already dressed and everything, like, ready to go.
They're like, no, you guys passed out. We couldn't find you. And then you guys wound up being out cold, and David's like, or Ralph's like, so that was just a nightmare? It's like, yep, sometimes nightmares are good for you. And he's like, okay. So they're pretty much gaslit into believing that nothing happened. It was all a figment of their imagination.
Oh, my God. And just like that bit, too, where he's, you know, they're reading the letter like, oh, you're going to accompany Judy back to Boston, and we bought your plane ticket. And he goes, what about Enid and whatever, and he's like, oh, and they've left too.
Yeah. Oh, P.S. They're coming with me or whatever he said. And then he's like, and then he goes to like grab the note, and Gabriel just throws it in the fire. It's like, these people are so unhinged. What is wrong with you?
Oh my God. And then that bit, like, you don't have to leave.
Oh, yeah. We've become very fond of you. You can stay for as long as you like. And Judy's like, well, my mom would worry. Can we come back next summer? It's like, yeah, sure. Come on back next summer.
And the entire time Ralph is like, let's go. Like,
let's get the fuck out of here. And when she even says bye to Mr. Punch, it's her dad's voice. And it's like something about short stuff or whatever. And Ralph's like, let's go. Time to go. And they get the fuck up out of there. And then the final shot, which is almost like a tourist trap level of awesome, is when the camera pans around to all these dolls on the shelf that resemble all of the people that were there and have been killed. And then we see another car getting stuck in the mud. So it's almost like they're on a loop of just every time someone leaves, someone else shows up.
Car got stuck in the mud. It's like, that's not even a road, guys. That's just grass you're driving on.
It's just driving in an open field. Yeah, so it's like, okay, this has obviously happened before. It's going to continue happening. All those dolls in there are just basically people at this point. And luckily for Ralph and Judy, they managed to get out unscathed for the most part. And she can go live her life back in Boston with her mother. And she was even like, you're going to love my mom. She's young and pretty and blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, I'm glad, Ralph. If they would have killed Ralph, I would have been like, damn it, you know? Half star
fuck
less.
Fuck this movie.
But no, Ralph and Judy survive. The only two people letting, or like being worthy of surviving. Everyone else.
And then Judy finds her, Mr. Teddy or Miss whatever.
Yep.
Ted, whatever the bear's name was.
Ted, Teddy, yeah. Finds that in the car.
Teddy Ruxpin.
So she gets her bear back. She gets her life. And she gets to go live with her mother and not live with those terrible, terrible human beings. Her stepmother and father. So. That is Dolls. Unless you have anything else to say, sir, about Dolls.
Couple things I wanted to say about Dolls.
Sure.
I love this movie. I've loved it since the first time I've saw it. And what I love so much about it is it's got those gothic sensibilities to it. It reminded me of like old Vincent Price movies and shit like that. So like it was a perfect movie to watch on a chill day, and there was a little bit of rain outside.
Oh, nice.
And it just kind of hit perfect with like the spooky season vibes. And because this time of year, this is the type of stuff I'm looking for.
Perfect.
You know, as horror fans, we watch horror so all year long that I need to kind of cater what I'm watching for Halloween, so I can, you know, because I don't want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre during Halloween. That's the wrong vibe. I'm trying to cultivate vibes, and this movie's perfect for that.
Yeah, this is a really good kickoff to spooky season. There's a charm to it, but there's also a very, very real sense of dread that comes with this movie as well. And it's a perfect combination of just light and fun, happy moments, and a bunch of creepy fucking dolls. But it's a good time. I can't recommend this movie enough. It is a great, I feel like it's just completely underappreciated. I know it's got great ratings, but just feel like no one talks about Dolls as much as they should. So do what you can to seek this movie out. Let's move on to some post-review stuff. I've got three taglines. You're never too old to play with dolls until you're dead. They want to
wasn't
play.
Expecting that one.
Yeah, that one caught me off guard when I wrote it down. I was like, damn, that got dark so quick. They want to play with you. They walk, they talk, they kill. Bum, bum, bum. So trivia here. This film was actually, like I mentioned earlier, this film was shot before Stuart Gordon's next film, From Beyond, 1986. It was actually shot on the same sets, but released almost a year afterward due to all the doll effects in post-production. They had to do a lot of shit to make these dolls move and look as good as they do. Dolls in the film were created with a combination of puppets, marionettes, stop-motion animation, and animatronics. God, I love the 80s. The most difficult shots in the film to accomplish were of the dolls attacking the characters as the puppeteer's hands and the strings were visible and hard to hide. I saw so many strings and like, you know, little puppet sticks, but it doesn't matter. It's fine. The cinematographer and editor found creative ways to hide them, which including drawing on the film reel with magic marker and very clever lighting. No goofs that I could find worthwhile. This is rated 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb. 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd, has a 60% on the tomato meter and a 51% audience score. I gave this movie a solid 4 stars. What did you give it?
I also gave it a solid 4 stars.
Oh my God, you know what time it is.
I actually raised it because at one point it was like 3.5, which is still a fucking solid rating. And I was like, I watched this most recent time. I was like, nah, this is fucking 4 star.
All right, well, with us both being 4s, that is a Frightmare certified slap. We're on a roll with slaps this month, baby. I love it. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, Tourist Trap, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dead Silence, and Curse of Chucky. Those are all solid picks. Those are all great picks. Yeah. And then similar movies according to IMDb, we have Cellar Dweller, The Dungeon Master, Arena, Robot Jocks, and From Beyond. I love how IMDb pairs them up with like who was involved in the movie, and Letterboxd typically pairs them up with good matches to like double
thematic
feature with.
Yeah.
All right, before we go here, let's read some funny reviews or some bad reviews. All mine, I don't even think I have any bad ones. I think they're all just kind of funny. I'm pretty sure they're all highly rated. Yeah. I've got 4, though, if you would like to. Do you have any that you found? I know we did this at, like, the last minute.
let's see. Yes, I got a couple.
Let's do it to it.
One of them, this is a bad review, and I found it funny. Bobby Bubble Bath gave it 1.5 stars. He's like, I can't wait to never watch this again.
Oh, no. Bobby Bubble Bath, with a name like that, I'm not trusting what you have to say.
Another 1.5 star review from Grumpy Man JP76 on Letterboxd. Young Elijah Wood in a wig is pretty good as the little girl.
Oh my God.
And then he continues on with Ralph is a solid everyman kind of quasi hero type. I was never sure if it was scary or funny, and I don't think the people making the film knew either.
That's a good one.
I've got 2.5 more. I'll explain the half in a second.
Oh, a half. Okay.
Some guy just named Aaron, all lowercase on Letterboxd, gave it 3.5 and a heart, and he goes strangely sensitive and sincere.
Oh.
This fun 80s gem kind of does Toy Story before Toy Story in a sense, very much centered around the magic of toys and childhood whilst delivering some gnarly strikes of gore and body horror. Interesting meditation on what we lose as we abandon our inner child. Weird mix? Sure, but a great surprise nonetheless.
That's a solid review right there.
And then this last one is by Tony the Terror 666 gave it 4.5 stars and a heart on Letterboxd.
Oh, okay.
He said, now this is how you make a goddamn movie about bitchy, petty killer dolls. Charlie B may be a total mess, but the man knows how to do his killer doll / puppet / toy movies, and I do love him for that, and pretty much that only. This is a refreshing 77 minutes, and that alone is enough for me to love it, but it's also got a creepy mansion on a dark and stormy night setting, great doll effects, and plenty of gore. Also, I seriously love Carolyn Purdy Gordon's bitchy stepmother with the towel wrapped around her head, even more then I love the name Carolyn Purdy Gordon, and I love that name a lot.
Oh my!
And then,
goodness.
And then finally, oh, yeah.
What's
the half?
What's the half?
So the reason I gave it a half, I said a half, because I showed this trailer to a friend of mine who I work with named Christina Soini. And I told her that I was watching this movie, and I sent her the trailer, and all she did was watch the trailer, and her initial reaction was, it's like Ted meets Cocaine Bear in Nightmares. Because the trailer really focuses on the bear.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
So, you know, and about, like, you know, you're like, dolls coming to life. So it's like Ted meets Cocaine Bear in Nightmares.
I like that. So, so that's a half review.
That was a review of the trailer.
All right. All right. Let's see. I've got four here. 3 stars from Nicholas Peterson on Letterboxd says, I would soccer kick these little jerks into a circular fan. Fair. Fair. 3.5 stars from Uzi Suicide. Again, I feel like I could kick a doll's ass. I mean, you'd think, but I mean, there's like fucking four.
When they're stabbing your toes and shit.
There's like 20 of them and one of you.
Yeah, feet are sensitive, man.
4 stars from John Watson. Can't think of many other directors who could pull off a tone of wholesome gore. I could have watched these dolls kill a dozen more people. Absolutely delightful. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yep. Last but not least, 3 stars from Your Hungry Dad. What? they don't make earnest yet campy and fun horror movies like this anymore. It's like a Tales from the Crypt movie, only it's an adorable little girl instead of Billy Zane.
They mentioned it being like a Tales of the Crypt. Honestly, it reminds me just of a gory R.L. Stein.
Yeah, that's exactly what it reminds me of. And it just has that 80s
goosebumps.
Yeah, it has that 80s charm to it and a jaunty tune here and there. It is seriously a delight. Michael, where can people hear the sultry sound of your voice on your podcast?
Well, I am on, I do a show called The Shameless Picture Show, and you can find us on pretty much every platform you listen to podcasts on, Spotify, Apple Music, so on and so forth, Amazon. And we are also on the Cinepunks Podcast Network. That's CinePunx.com. Yes. And we do, I'm on that network, and you can hear other great shows such as Cinepunks, Cinema Smorgasbord, Twitch of the Death Nerve, Tomb of Ideas, and many more. So check that out. You can see all of our past episodes and all the episodes Austin was on, because he's been on quite a few. And then you can find me pretty much everywhere at Michael_Viers.
Yes, on Facebook, and then you're on the TikTok at Shameless Picture Show.
Oh, yeah, I am on TikTok, where I do physical media reviews.
Yes.
And actually, so a couple things I'll talk about with that. I do physical media reviews pretty much on TikTok. But I will have a new segment coming up very shortly on upcoming episodes of the podcast, almost exclusively. It's called It Came From Severin.
Ooh.
And it's just a couple. It's me talking a little bit more in depth, not terribly long, about some stuff that I got from Severin recently. It's part of a deal. And if anyone here listening is local to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, check out a place called Video Nerd on the East Side, because the titles I'll be talking about from Severin should be available there locally.
Oh, okay. I love it. I love it. Anything else you have to add, good sir, before we sign off here?
If anyone is local to the Wisconsin area and you want to see my newest film, No Soliciting, it will be playing at the Port of Fear Horror Film Festival in Kenosha, Wisconsin on Sunday, October 1st. It will also be playing at the Sawdust City Fright Fest in Oshkosh, Wisconsin on Saturday, October 14th. And on top of that, it will be playing at the Twisted Dreams Film Festival on October 21st in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I'll also be doing a panel. Where I will be moderating a panel. So that should be a good time.
That is a sick plug. I love it. And on that wonderful note, go support his film if you can and you're local to the area. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and the Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are Viers 108220. I'll get it right one of these days.
10-2008.
10-2008. Next week, me and my buddy Mikey from the Slashers Podcast are going to be doing a John Carpenter movie from the 90s. It is going to be killer. Until next week, stay tuned and stay spooky.
Stay spooky.
Stay spooky.